Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina, disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He is the author of the new book, The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted. And he just wrote the essay published at Bill Moyers. Anatomy of the Deep State. Welcome to Background Briefing, Mike Lofgren.
Good to be with you, Ian, once again.
And Mike, this essay that you've just written, Anatomy of the Deep State, and your appearance on Bill Moyers recently has gotten an awful lot of attention. Let me just read the first paragraph of your essay, and then you can pick it up from there. There is the visible government situated around the mall in Washington, and then there's another, more shadowy, more indefinable government that is not explained in Civics 101 or observable to tourists at the White House or the Capitol. The former is traditional Washington partisan politics, the tip of the iceberg that a public watching C-SPAN sees daily and which is theoretically controllable via elections. The subsurface part of the iceberg I shall call the deep state, which operates according to its own compass headings, regardless of who is formally in power. So take us further into describing this deep state that you say is a hybrid of corporate America and the national security state, which is out of control and unconstrained.
Well, we all know about the system. You can't beat the system. Well, this is the system, and it's kind of like the blind man examining the elephant. Each one of us sees a different thing. Occupy Wall Street sees Wall Street as this big looming power. Most people are familiar with the idea of the military-industrial complex. Ever since Eisenhower's farewell speech in January 1961. This simply puts everything together, tries to connect the dots. I mean, we all know of the tendency in the last 30 years of businesses to merge. We've seen a great consolidation all over industry. This is the merger of certain sectors of business with certain key sectors of government, mainly having to do with finance and national security. The huge amount of contracting out that we see in the government is, and the revolving door of personnel between business, whether it's Wall Street or the military-industrial complex, is a part of this. The personnel become indistinguishable, the policies become indistinguishable, and they are increasingly remote from citizens' ability to control them.
So what then is the ultimate motive of the powers that be that run the deep state, particularly in terms of deregulation and the financialization of the economy? Do they want a new American feudalism?
That's what it would amount to, but they don't sort of want as an endpoint any of those things necessarily. Those are how they achieve what they want, which is power, money, and influence. And this sort of thing was presumably not a conspiracy or a conscious cabal. I am not a conspiracy theorist. These things happen mainly in broad daylight, and they may have been an inevitable evolution because the United States came out of World War II, the most powerful country in the world, with half the world's GDP at the time, an industrial colossus, possession of the Manhattan Project, the atomic bomb, the first intercontinental bombers. And a lot of people were saying, this is the American century. And I'm sure there were people in the government, the wise men in the government at the time, who said, this thing is really too sensitive. It's too important for world historical purposes to really put under the control of those flighty and capricious voters.
Well, when Eisenhower made that speech in January of 61, that arguably was the height of the American social democratic experiment that arguably went from 1947 to 1977. And that's when America was a social democracy, not unlike the European social democracies, where people paid their taxes and got something back. And the rich under Eisenhower paid 92% tax. So the changes that have gone about since then, again, gets back to my question, is do these oligarchs that run our plutonomy and this new plutocracy that controls America, do they not recognize that a healthy middle class is beneficial to all? Do they not care about stepping over homeless people on their way into a five-star restaurant?
First, you're very well versed on historical tax policy. Yes, the rich were taxed at a marginal rate of 92% during Eisenhower's administration, and he was a Republican. So that's an amazing point. But I think the man becomes the mask. They are deeply committed to an ideology of neoliberalism, of outsourcing, of financialization of the economy, of these trade deals, arbitraging labor globally to get the lowest common denominator. They believe it is the best of all possible worlds, because Milton Friedman proved it. Friedrich Hayek proved it. They assert they're not ideologues. They assert that they're merely technocrats giving the best advice possible. But they deeply believe in that ideology, just as they believe in the American exceptionalism ideology of boots on the ground and the U.S. getting involved in every dispute around the world.
Again, I'm speaking with Mark Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on TARP, Hurricane Katrina, disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of the new book, The Party is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, and just wrote the essay published at BillMoyers.com, Anatomy of the Deep State. Well, to me, though, the way that the country's really changed in the way that you have described this deep state that's just metastasized within the government and essentially become the government, going back to when the U.S. was a social democracy between 47 and 77, the fundamental change is that the tax money that goes into the Treasury, and of course less of it comes from the rich because they pay less taxes, goes back out in the form of corporate welfare to these private contractors who have taken over government services. And that came out, it came to light with the Snowden affair when we learned that Booz Allen Hamilton gets 98% of its money from the taxpayer, and Booz Allen Hamilton in turn is owned by the Carlyle Group, which is the ultimate in revolving door of those were really senior government officials who went from government to industry and industry to government, and that's common. That's why they call the Treasury Department government sacks. So give me a sense then of whether that is how much that's a part of your thesis.
Oh, it's very much. It's very integral to the thesis. And you see with Booz Allen Hamilton, the NSA, and the Carlyle Group, you see sort of this tripartite thing of the contractors for the national security state and they're all working for the NSA. They've essentially taken over the NSA. 70% of the intelligence budget is contracts to private contractors. The NSA, in turn, works very intimately with Silicon Valley, which is the new great generator of wealth, and I might add income inequality in the San Francisco Bay Area, because they need that capability not only for global surveillance, but for the avionics, the guidance systems, and the electronics of every single weapons platform of DOD. And then you've got the Carlyle Group, which is intimately connected with finance and Wall Street. So you have kind of a symbiotic relationship here. And, of course, the Silicon Valley mega billionaires all claim to be libertarians, but some of them got seed money back in the 80s and 90s for some of their startups from the CIA and the other intelligence organizations. There was a venture capital front out in Silicon Valley known as InQtel, which was basically a pipeline for CIA money. So these people were subsidized at the beginning, some of them, by the national security state, and now they're shocked that all this stuff is going on. Well, I think mainly what they're shocked about is the prospect of losing market share in the rest of the world.
But, Mike Lufkin, if you talk to intelligence officers and military officers, they are absolutely disgusted with what's happening with the contracting business, that it's poaching all of the talented people into private industry and absolutely eviscerating the talent that's left in the CIA and in the Department of Defense. They, you know, nobody likes Halliburton. Nobody likes Blackwater in the armed services. And the bottom line is that these contractors don't have to perform. And one of the ironies, for example, is that one of the ways that Edward Snowden got away with not being detected for so long was that his security clearance was vetted after he tried to break into the Director of Operations computers in 2008 in Geneva. His security clearance was vetted by one of these private contractors who hire minimum wage workers, you know? So the taxpayer is getting shafted on this, and there are people inside government who are, I guess, you know, patriots who are disgusted by it.
Yes, there are. I wouldn't draw such a sharp distinction that everybody is.
No, I'm not suggesting
it. Is disgusted by this. Some generals take the money because they
most
know
of them do, yeah.
that they can make seven-figure salaries on the boards of defense contractors and intelligence contractors. But the smartest people, let's put it this way, that I have known in the last 30 years coming out of the Pentagon, they understood what the deal was, and they're not happy about it. But they're not the ones running the show. It's become almost running by inertia now. The business with Halliburton and the various other contractors, they know it is driving expenses up. And that's another one of the big mythologies. Privatization would drive down costs because you have competition. One, you don't have competition when you give a no-bid contract to Halliburton to do logistics in Iraq. And the other thing is the government doesn't make a profit for its own services, so it's the cost is whatever it costs to do it. Halliburton's always going to make that percentage.
Well, it does seem, though, that this unbridled greed of being able to have unfettered access to the Treasury and not having to perform because, you know, you just basically hoover up the money. I mean, isn't the F-35 fighter the perfect example of where we're heading, where this the most expensive weapon system in history doesn't work? It doesn't perform as well as the airplanes it's replacing, and it costs zillions, and it's going to cost zillions to maintain these things. And at the end of the day, you know, these patriots in the defense contracting world making all this money are arguing that they're defending America. They put out these ads on television showing Lockheed Martin and all these companies how they're defending America, when in fact, they're stealing America blind, just the way that Yanukovych stole the Ukrainian treasury. So how long can they keep this up if they can't deliver on anything? And by the way, in case you haven't noticed lately, Mike, the United States has been losing all the wars that it gets into.
Yeah, that fact has not been lost on me. And it's interesting, I sort of thought you were going to say F-35 about 3 seconds before you did say it, because that's a marquee example of a plane that is years behind schedule, tens of billions, if not hundreds of billions, over budget. My only fear is now that we seem to be lurching into a new Cold War, the rationale for it that didn't exist when we were fighting bearded people in caves will suddenly reappear, that now more than ever we need it. However, I know some very smart former Pentagon civilians, Pierre Spray, who was involved in the F-16 development, people like Tom Christie, who were involved in operational testing, and they'll tell you that this F-35 is not much plane, not much performance for an awful lot of money.
So does this explain then why so many progressives are disappointed in Obama and they've given up on him? And a lot of my friends are, you know, more angry at Obama than they are at his predecessor, the wrecking crew of Bush and Cheney. And their disappointment, I guess, is in the idea that he wasn't the miracle worker that he was supposed to be, the hope and change. And your thesis, the deep state, to me explains why, which is that if you get into the Oval Office, you know, there's not a lot you can do to change the deep state. It just continues on. It doesn't matter who's in the White House. It probably doesn't even matter who runs the Senate and who runs the House.
Well, that's true. I mean, I'm not excusing Obama because he wanted the job, but the behavior of people like Bob Gates and General Petraeus in sort of going around the administration to surreptitiously lobby Capitol Hill and to leak things to the media to kind of force the hand of the administration on escalation in Afghanistan shows that the very president of the United States that we elect as our commander-in-chief doesn't have complete running room. He's constrained by the bureaucracy that he nominally presides over. And I'll give you a very recent example. If people are familiar with the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, Victoria Nuland, who made a very undiplomatic comment about her own European colleagues who are supposed to be the subject of her portfolio, with whom she's supposed to maintain good diplomatic relations with, and who was also caught idly chit-chatting over the phone about what people we might want to pick for a new cabinet in Ukraine. Clearly there was no one can excuse territorial aggression by Putin. You can't justify it, but there is some explanation that we were fishing in troubled waters.
Well, it's also pretty amazing, Mike, isn't it, that after Iraq and these neocons, this incredible misadventure that they took this country on, why anybody listens to them, and how come a neocon like Newland is still in the government, you know?
Precisely. The big tell there is she was an advisor for Dick Cheney during the Bush administration, and now she is Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs under the Obama administration. I guess it's a case of no matter who's in the Oval Office, meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Well, it's pretty depressing, and I really recommend people read your article, The Anatomy of the Deep State. It's available at BillMoyers.com, right?
It sure is.
And also you can see your interview with him as well at Bill Moyers. It's online. I thank you for joining us, Mike Lofgren.
Thanks very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Mike Lofgren, who has spent 28 years working in Congress, the last 16 as a senior analyst on the House and Senate budget committees, which gave him ringside seats on top, Hurricane Katrina, disaster relief, debates on the Pentagon budget, and the amazing antics of various deficit reduction commissions. He's the author of The Party Is Over, How Republicans Went Crazy, Democrats Became Useless, and the Middle Class Got Shafted, and just wrote the essay published at BillMoyers.com, Anatomy of the Deep State. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.